The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Well, we're talking about the hindrances, for those of you who are just joining us on the internet. And the term for hindrances that is usually translated as hindrance is nivarana, and it is often, it's often translated as hindrance, but that tends to make us think about the hindrances as being something that we have an antagonistic relationship with. I mean, they hinder our concentration, so we got to get rid of them, right? I mean, that's the way it sounds. That's the way it feels when we hear that term. Another translation for the term that Gill points to is covering, that the hindrances basically cover up our well-being. They cover up our ability to concentrate. And so it's not so much to have an adversarial relationship with them as to allow them to be uncovered. So these states of sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and anxiety, and doubt do tend to get in the way of our ability to concentrate, of our sense of well-being. So they do hinder our meditation, but only as long as we are not aware of them. When they are operating out of a habitual pattern, out of habitual tendency, that's when they tend to get in the way. When we actually turn our attention to them with mindfulness, they actually become the path. They're no longer serving to hinder us. They actually support our ability to cultivate concentration. They support our ability to connect with a sense of well-being when we turn towards them. So the Buddha gave instructions in the main discourse he gave about his teaching on mindfulness instructions. He talked about attending to the hindrances. He said, notice when they're present, notice when they're absent, notice what makes them come into being, notice what supports their dissipating. When we do this, it completely shifts how the hindrances function in our minds. When these states of ill will, of sense desire, of dullness, of doubt, of restlessness, when we're kind of bought into them, when we believe them, they're kind of choosing our... They're making choices for us, essentially. They make our choices for us. But when we turn with mindfulness, it's as if we get a little bit of distance from these states. And we are choosing from the place of mindfulness instead of the hindrances making our choices for us. So it fundamentally shifts our relationship to these states by becoming aware of them with mindfulness. So tonight I'd like to talk about rest of sleepiness, the dullness, sloth, and torpor in a little more detail. So I've been talking about, in the past few weeks when I've been here, talking about each of the hindrances. There's an analogy used for each of the hindrances where the Buddha is talking about how the particular hindrance obstructs our ability to see clearly with means of an analogy. And he uses an analogy of a water bowl that can be used, if the water is clear, to see, to reflect. With sloth and torpor, he says it's as if that bowl of water has been covered with algae. It's thick with growth. So sloth and torpor basically refer to not having the energy to practice. Sloth, referring to the kind of dullness of mind, the mental dullness of mind, so a dullness of mind energy. And torpor, referring to sleepiness, which may actually be more of a physical dullness, a physical need for sleep. So both sloth and torpor, they relate both not only to the energy of the mind, but the energy of the body. So when these states of mind are present, it's hard to arouse the energy to meditate. And sometimes we feel like it's not even possible to meditate when we're sleepy or dull like this. I think most people, I'll ask you, how many of you have had the thought, I'm too sleepy to meditate? If you can have that thought, you actually have enough mindfulness to pay attention to the sleepiness. And I'll talk a little bit about ways to connect with that energy, that ability to connect with sleepiness. So in sloth, with the state of sloth, the dullness of mind, the mind feels thick, it feels heavy, it feels unworkable, foggy. With sleepiness, we can just drop, you know, just lose it. Or the mind can go into a kind of a drifty, dreamy kind of state. So these are the kind of, this is the terrain that we're going to talk about tonight. Now, sleepiness is a, or this, both the dullness and the sleepiness are very, very common with meditation. There's a lot of reasons why this happens. I mean, we're meditating, our eyes are closed, we're instructed to relax the body. Sounds a lot like what we do when we go to sleep. We relax the body, we close our eyes. So the mind gets into that place where we relax the body and close our eyes, and it thinks, oh, it's time to sleep. So it's kind of, at first, when we first start meditating, it's kind of habitual that we need to break the habit of wanting to fall asleep when we close our eyes and relax. So that's kind of the beginning. When we first start to meditate, we just need to recognize that that's going to happen to us. And then another reason why we get sleepy when we meditate is because we tend to be overactivated in our lives. We're doing so much. We're so busy. We're so active. Many times we're actually sleep deprived. And when we stop, it's like the body goes, oh, thank goodness, you know, finally I can rest. And we actually, the sleepiness of sometimes that we're experiencing in meditation is actually an indication that we need to sleep. So that's something to look at also, that, you know, if you're trying to meditate and you've only had 4 hours of sleep the night before, there may be a connection, you know, that we need a certain amount of rest. The other thing that happens, and I'll just mention this briefly right now and talk about it a little bit more a little bit later, is that as the mind settles, as the mind kind of calms down, it begins to get concentrated, it begins to settle, it begins to get calm, and there can be a settling of mind into concentration, but that settling needs to be balanced by a certain amount of energy. And if it's not balanced by energy, that settling and concentrating of the mind will just, it's called sinking mind. We just kind of sink into a kind of a non-existence. You know, we just drop because the mind has gotten so calm, but there's not the corresponding kind of energy to balance it. And this is often manifest, or the preview to this, or the precursor to this, manifests as the dreaminess that you notice sometimes in meditation, that the mind begins to just drift in these dreamy kind of thoughts. Often that indicates the mind is settling down, but it's not quite got enough energy. And I'll talk a little bit more about working with that later. So for the basic kind of sleepiness, dullness of mind, the Buddha actually gave quite a bit of suggestions, quite a few suggestions for working with sleepiness. First things he suggested were change your posture. If you're sitting, stand, or perhaps do some walking meditation. The standing posture, the walking posture inherently have more energy in them. And so bring some energy into the system. Mostly what's happening with this state of mind, with sleepiness, with dullness, is that it's a low energy state. And so the instructions are find ways to increase the energy a little bit. Standing and walking are both ways that you can increase the energy. And any time in here, I know in the evening, after a day at work or a full day of whatever you have been engaged with, sometimes it can be that you can be sleepy at the end of a day. It's fine to do standing meditation. It's always fine to do standing meditation here. So if that supports you, please go ahead and do that. Another really helpful tool is opening your eyes and looking at light. So you can look up at the lights here in the room, or if it's during the daytime, actually look out the window. Bringing in light also serves to brighten the mind. So that's a very helpful tool for sleepiness. You can rub your limbs, you know, get your blood circulating, pinch your ears. This is actually quite effective. Pinch your ears hard. It kind of hurts a little bit. But I find that it only works while I'm doing it. As soon as I stop doing it, I'll fall asleep again. Another thing I found interesting to play with when I'm really sleepy is to open my eyes and just see if I can keep track of when they close. You know, sometimes when I'm really, really sleepy, I'll open my eyes and then, you know, I don't even notice it, but there I am again, like this. It's like, oh, I missed it. Okay, open my eyes again and see if I can actually find that moment where the eyes just close. And sometimes I can do that. You know, that actually what you're doing is sharpening the interest. You're adding energy through the system by adding some interest into the equation. So seeing if you can find that moment where the eyes shut. My teacher in Burma suggested something that was actually quite helpful. He suggested walking backwards when you were sleepy. And this is also quite good because walking backwards is not a normal thing for us to do, and so the mind has to wake up a little bit to figure out how to do it. And if I'm going to also talk about quite a few other ways, this is kind of just some of the basic ways to work with sleepiness. But it's also, at times, we sometimes need to just take a rest. It may well be, I mean, if you're not having the thought, I'm too sleepy to meditate, and you're just sleeping, it may be time to take a rest. So in my experience with attending to this hindrance, to attending to sleepiness and dullness of mind, generally when we're meditating, we really resist this feeling of sleepiness because we think we can't meditate when we're sleepy. So we resist the feeling of sleepiness, we're trying to fight it, and that's really unpleasant. The feeling of sleepiness, when you're resisting it, does not feel good. It just feels really unpleasant. So one of the biggest tricks around paying attention to sleepiness is to not resist it. Just see if you can meet it. Just recognize the feeling. I actually was doing this in my meditation just before the talk because I've just come back from teaching a 10-day retreat, and I'm often quite it's been quite a lot of energy, and so I'm low energy. And so I was just sitting here just feeling the sleepiness. And if you can just connect to the feeling of sleepiness, it's actually quite pleasant. So this is one trick with working with sleepiness. If you can let go of resisting it and then connect to the pleasant experience, that pleasantness often adds some interest because it feels good. And that adds a little bit of energy. I had one experience on one retreat where I was just trying to track this feeling of sleepiness. And I was just, I got to the place where I realized it was pointless to resist it. So I was just sitting there and I just felt this feeling descend in the body. And it was extremely pleasant. The muscles got very relaxed. The feeling of heaviness and looseness and like liquidity through the body. And then the mind kind of relaxed and went into this kind of, you know, vibrating, pleasant state. And then I would drop. And that would wake me up. And then I'd just do the whole thing all over again. And doing this over and over again, I got to the place where I could tell right before I was going to drop. I could actually feel the moment right before, like the intention to fall asleep. I could feel the way the mind shifted to that place right before it was going to fall asleep. And when that happened, when I noticed that moment, I just straightened up my body a little bit. Just added a little bit of energy because it had started to slump. So straightened up the body. And then I could just do it all over again. It was so much fun. It was really, really pleasant. I mean, it was like this wonderful descending into this pleasurable bath and then doing it over and over and over again. You know, I described this to somebody at one point, and they said, "Isn't that cheating?" No. As long as you can pay attention, you're cultivating mindfulness. You're cultivating awareness. It's not a kind of sharp, crisp awareness. I'm going to give you an analogy that I often use, and I've probably used it in this class before. But you know, the mind and the mindfulness are kind of like a mirror. They reflect what's happening. They reflect our experience. And when our mind is sleepy, it's as if that mirror has been coated with fog, with steam. And so if you're trying to use that mirror that's coated with fog to reflect things in the room, it's not going to do a very good job of it. So that's where the unpleasantness comes from, actually. That's part of where the unpleasantness comes from. Because when the mind is dull and sleepy like that, it's like there's a fog over the mindfulness. And so trying to pay attention to the breath, trying to pay attention to sound or body sensation, it's like there's this fog between us and the body sensations. So it's hard to connect with those other sensations. But let's go back to the mirror analogy for just a moment. You know, with that mirror and that steam on the mirror, that the mirror is reflecting perfectly that steam. And likewise with the mindfulness and the fogginess, the dullness, the mindfulness is doing its job perfectly. It is perfectly reflecting that dullness and that sleepiness. It's just that we're trying to use it to do something else. So if you can connect with the mind that knows the dullness, the mind that knows the sleepiness, things become much easier in our meditation. So getting familiar with what it feels like is helpful. Not resisting is really helpful. And seeing if you can begin to touch into this ability to know the feeling of sleepiness. So with the dullness of mind, you know, what I've been talking about applies to both, actually. With the dullness of mind, there's some specific things that support a working with that kind of foggy, thick mind, unworkable mind. So this is a kind of mind that it just feels like it can't connect with experience very well. There's a couple of qualities of the mind that support connecting with experience. There's the Pali terms for these, not that you need to know this or remember them. The Pali terms are vitakka and vichara, and they basically stand for the part of the quality of the mind that aims its attention, that points to, that connects with experience, and then there's the sustaining. The vichara is the sustaining of the attention. And these two pieces, the aiming the attention and the sustaining of the attention, are kind of the basic tools that we use to connect with our mindfulness. We, in doing the awareness of breathing, we turn our attention to the breath. We connect with the breath, and then we try to sustain our attention for a time on the breath. When we're sleepy, it's not so helpful to try to be sustaining for long periods of time. The mind can't do that. It's much more helpful to just see if you can connect, aiming the attention at whatever we're paying attention to. It might be hearing, it might be the breath, it might be aiming the attention at the sleepiness itself. Just recognizing, oh, there's a breath, oh, there's a breath, there's an in-breath, there's an out-breath, just connecting with the with experience. This connecting quality of mind is said to be the antidote to sleepiness. This is one of the factors of mind that counters sleepiness. And so you can consciously use this. If you are finding yourself dull or sleepy, you could try bringing a little bit more carefulness to try to connect with experience. It feels like counterintuitive in a way because the mind is dull, it's thick. But sometimes we can just turn and say, okay, what's the very beginning of the in-breath feel like? What's the very beginning of the out-breath feel like? Sometimes we can do that when the mind is sleepy. And that can brighten up the mind. It can brighten things up. Or you might try doing, in the walking meditation, instead of, you know, doing a faster walking, try doing a slower walking and see if you can really notice the lifting, the moving, the placing, all of the different components of it. This is more for the foggy mind as opposed to the sleepy mind. The sleepy mind, it's much harder to do this kind of precision. But when the mind is foggy, sometimes it helps to just add a little bit of impetus to that connecting to experience. So it seems almost counterintuitive, but actually this making this effort, this is a little bit of effort to connect with experience. Making effort actually generates energy. And this will counter that fogginess, that dullness of mind. So I'm going to talk for just a little bit longer. Sleepiness and dullness that arises as a result of a deepening of concentration. This also, using this precision, can support that dullness of that sleepiness or that driftiness or that dreaminess that happens as you get settled. And it's really helpful to know, actually, that this happens. This retreat that I just taught was a retreat on concentration. And so frequently, actually, people came and said, well, I've lost my concentration. And I would ask them to say why, what had happened. And they say, well, I'm thinking more. And I'd say, well, what are the thoughts like? Oh, they're just like dreams. That usually is actually an indication that the concentration is deepening. It's not the kind of thought that's you're actively thinking about your day yesterday or what you're going to do tomorrow. It's just the mind kind of having let go of the kind of normal structure of thought. And without the energy, it drifts off into these dreamlike states. So to know, actually, that this indicates a deepening of concentration, it's not a problem. It's just that the energy is a little out of balance with the concentration. So one thing that's really helpful, some of the things that I've suggested here are supportive, opening the eyes. You could do standing, you can do walking. As the mind goes into that state, you can add a little more precision. The thing that's really important, though, as the mind moves into that drifty, dreamy place, is to make really small adjustments, because the mind has begun to settle down. And if I had this happen once where I was doing meditation and I thought, oh, you know, this is not acceptable, this sleepiness, and I was actually fairly settled. And I got up and I started, you know, really being very energetic with my body. And it spun me into a state of restlessness pretty quickly. So the things that you do with your mind as it begins to settle into concentration kind of are amplified. So you need to make smaller adjustments when the mind is in that kind of dreamy state. So simple, small things, opening your eyes, maybe just a little bit more of seeing if you can connect with the beginning of the in-breath, maybe connect with the beginning and the end of the in-breath, connect with the beginning and the end of the out-breath. Small adjustments. You can also do, just take a couple of deeper breaths, which as you settle into concentration, often the breath actually gets more still. It gets more quiet. And this is actually something, I'm just going to say this, it's not necessarily related to this particular hindrance, but you know, we often think about, as we pay attention to the breathing, we think about a relaxed breath being a long, slow, deep breath. And we feel like if we're not having a long, slow, deep breath, it must mean that the breath is tense, that our mind is tense. But actually what happens as we settle in to our concentration, the breath actually gets much shallower, much shorter. And I think this too may have something to do with the sleepiness that can sometimes happen. You know, if there's not the mental energy, then the shallower breaths are not providing quite as much of the oxygen. This is not a problem as the mind settles in a balanced way. You know, I had one person on this last retreat say, I'm not breathing. And I said, well, are you holding your breath? No. Are you feeling like you're gasping for breath? No. Then it's fine. You know, it's not a problem to have the breathing become so small, so shallow. But it can result in a little bit of this sleepiness. And so one or two deep breaths can bring back some energy into the mind and body. There's some other antidotes for sleepiness, for sloth and torpor, that the Buddha recommended. I think this more for sleepiness. And he recommended reflecting on death, reflecting on the fact that our lives are short, that we don't know when our death will come, and that we have the opportunity to practice now, and we don't know actually how long we have. So that reflection can bring some energy into the mind. There's another state of mind that happens as we meditate. that seems like it's sleepiness or dullness, but it's slightly different. And so I'm just going to kind of point it out to you, and you can check in for your in your own experience. Sometimes it seems like everything's really foggy. But when you actually check in, it's like, well, the mind feels pretty awake. It's not like I feel sleepy. But it's like, it's hard to find, it's hard to touch the experience. It's like, there's just, it feels so like slippery or foggy. It's just, it's hard to connect with. Sometimes it happens that the things that we are paying attention to are foggy. It's not the mind that's dull or sleepy. It's not the mind that's foggy or dull. It's just the things that are in our awareness that are foggy. So this is kind of like looking out a window on a foggy day. If it's really foggy, you can barely see the outlines of the trees out there. If you're trying to see the details of the trees, it's not going to work very well. But you know that the eye is functioning fine. There's no problem with the eye. So you can just see the kind of shape of things with the fog. And sometimes that's what's happening in our meditation, that there's not particularly this hindrance of sleepiness, but we mistake it for that because the things in our awareness are foggy. This kind of state usually happens after you've been meditating for some time. But I just wanted to put it out there because it was a little confusing to me when I first started seeing it. Let's see if there's anything else I want to say. Mostly I want to encourage you to explore whether you can be mindful of the sleepiness, of the dullness itself. For me, it was quite a shift when I could begin to do this. When that thought of, oh, I'm too sleepy to meditate, stopped being a hindrance. I mean, that actually is a hindrance. I'm too sleepy to meditate. That's a belief that the mind cannot connect to experience in this state. And when I stopped believing that and actually began connecting, it really supported moving through the state of sleepiness. So I'd really just like to encourage you to play with it when you are sleepy. It's not a problem. Explore particularly the pleasantness of it, noticing that it's the resistance to the sleepiness that makes it feel unpleasant. So playing with it and seeing what you can connect with in that way. So are there any comments or questions? In the back. Wait, we'll use the mic.
Two questions. One is in reference to what they call circadian rhythms. I understand that the brain naturally rises and falls like the sun and the moon based on, you know, regardless of our cultural habitats and stuff. I find, for example, at 4 in the afternoon, that's it. I'm initially toast for about an hour, and then I'm okay at 5, something like that. The other question is probably quite related. It's related to caffeinated drinks like tea. And I was just wondering, do Buddhist monks drink caffeinated tea or herbal tea or no tea? Or where does tea come into this? half British, I'm...
With respect to the circadian rhythms, I think you're right. There is a kind of a natural flow. Although, you know, I'm not sure if there's been any studies done about this, but when I meditate and I go on retreat, the mind gets really quiet and it stops thinking so much. And I've come to the conclusion that thinking takes a tremendous amount of energy. When the mind settles down and doesn't think so much, it's good for about 4 hours of sleep. You know, I need about 9 hours of sleep in my normal life, and when I go on retreat, I need about five. So it really shifts with the meditation. The need for sleep really shifts. And that 5 hours of sleep, I'm alert all day. I'm not sleepy all day. So the way that we engage with our mind really impacts the need for sleep.
That makes me ask an ancillary or a second question. As far as your diet, when you're on these retreats, is it mostly like rice and vegetables? I mean, is your body working less hard to digest proteins and fats and stuff?
Well, certainly we don't eat meat on the retreats. We get lots of rice and beans. We get actually lovely meals, vegetarian meals.
Sure, and would you think that vegetarian would contribute to your alertness, if you will?
Oh, it's possible. I mean, we get an awful lot of pasta, though, you know, that that's well known for putting people to sleep. Then you asked about tea. It varies in the different cultures. In Burma, for instance, caffeinated beverages, well, caffeinated tea and coffee are not allowed afternoon. But I've seen them drinking Coke, so I'm not sure what the rule really is, you know, whether it's just, I don't know what it is. Monks do use caffeine. I mean, I found myself that it is helpful at times, but I'm pretty cautious with it because it has a pretty strong impact on the body and the mind. But they do use caffeine. And was there another part of your question? No,
One would assume then that they use a tea or a caffeinated beverage in moderation, I presume. I mean, you know, it's not like Starbucks hits Burma or something.
Most monasteries know.
Here we go.
Yeah, Peter.
So thanks for talking about your experiences at the threshold of dreams or unconsciousness, depending on where you were headed. When you're talking about aiming, is that the same or related to curiosity or investigation? Because that's sometimes what I've been able to do with sleep is, this is...
Add some interest.
This is what sleepiness is, what it feels like. In contrast to intention relative to aiming.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little, please?
Yeah, the aiming is a different quality than the interest and the investigation. It's kind of, it can arise with interest and investigation that aiming tends to be easier to connect with. So it's kind of a supporting condition, in a sense, for the aiming. The aiming is just that quality of just kind of pointing to. So choosing to attend to something.
That's more pure attention.
Yes, it's pure attention and intention to direct the mind to something. Now, one of the interesting pieces about this is, that those two qualities together, that aiming and that sustaining of the attention, those two pieces are so important for us to get familiar with in our meditation. As we learn about that aiming, learn about how to point our attention to something. Initially, we need to kind of do that frequently. The sustaining piece takes a little bit longer to connect with. And have I given the scooter analogy in here? I probably have given this. Have I talked about the, no, not getting any I'll tell you the scooter analogy again, or for the first time for some of you. With the scooter, you know, the scooters that these kids play on, that they ride on, to get going, you've got to tap your foot on the ground. And to start, you have to tap pretty frequently. But after a while, the momentum gets going, and you can ride for a while, and then just tap occasionally. And those two aspects, the tapping is like the aiming, and the momentum is like the sustaining of the attention. And so initially we need to aim frequently, and then after some period of time, the sustaining will begin to last longer. And so initially we may need to in-breath, end of in-breath, out-breath, end of out-breath. And then at some point it's, oh, in-breath, out-breath. And then it may just be in-breath. And then the attention will sustain through the whole thing. You don't need to... And then it may be four or five breaths that you can ride without having to actually try to pay attention to the breath. It's much more about that, you know, noticing that intentionality towards that. Initially we have to really work at connecting with experience, and after some time it will become more fluid and flowing, and that's the sustaining quality. And then we don't have to work so hard. So it's that... But the qualities that you mentioned about interest and investigation, they support both of those qualities, actually. Is that enough? Was there anything more?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, in the back.
You talked about learning to identify that moment right before you slipped into sleep. And I'm curious if you ever tried or think it would be effective to reverse that and actually put yourself to sleep by duplicating the same state of being, of thought, of slumping, of whatever, and essentially like overcoming any kind of insomnia and being able to reverse that process.
You know, there are times when I have on retreat needed to... sometimes on retreat the mind gets so, it's like that aiming and sustain, it's there, it's paying attention, and it's hard to let go. And I've discovered that I need about 5 hours of sleep on retreat, and if the mind is like, it's almost like it's just like wired. And I have had to find times where I've had to consciously let go of the attention. So this is, it's a different thing. I mean, it's kind of, for me at least, it's a different thing that often when we're awake, the mind is latched onto something. In that state of sleepiness, it's already let go. So to put yourself to sleep, what I find is to find a way to distract the mind from what it's latched onto. With a repetitive kind of thought, or a kind of a planning thought, or something where you think, I'm never going to remember this, I'm never going to remember this, you know, that kind of thing. Or something where it's just convinced you that this is the time for you to think about this. You know, the mind is just latched on to this thing. It's like, I've got to figure this out right now. One way that I found really helpful with most of those kind of states is to kind of talk to the mind and let it know that this isn't the time for this kind of reflection, but that I make an appointment with myself to think about that thing that it thinks is so important. It's like, okay, at 10 o'clock tomorrow, I will think about this. And then you have to keep your appointment. You know, for this to work, you have to keep your appointment. But it's very effective if you do keep your appointment. You know, it's like the mind kind of goes, oh, okay, whew, okay. And you know, you may even need to make yourself a note, you know, think about this at 10 o'clock in the morning or something. But that is a way in which the mind can kind of go, okay, this is going to be taken care of. And so it kind of allows it to let go. Another thing that I find that I have found helpful in terms of distracting myself, and this may sound a little silly, but it was very effective for me. This was a on a retreat where the mind was kind of latched into the attention. And it was hard to let go of the mindfulness. It's kind of like, may I not be mindful now? may the mind relax and go to sleep. I found, my teacher told me that I needed to distract my mind so that I could fall asleep. And so I thought, okay, well, that means I need to think about something else, consciously think about something. And I realized, well, you know, if I think about something that has any kind of emotional charge to it or any kind of pleasantness to it, like if I think about being on a beach in Tahiti, you know, the mind's just going to go right in there. You know, it's just going to latch onto that and think about that. Or if I, you know, thought about friends or a good time I'd have, that would just go off into that as well. So I picked the most innocuous, inane thing I could think about to put into my mind. And that was an image of Winnie the Pooh floating on a balloon. And this was very effective. Now, I haven't tried this so much at home, you know, but I think it actually, there might be something to it, you know. Just pick something that's pretty neutral and simple to put into your mind and think about that for 2 or 3 minutes. And it may cut the impetus in that direction towards that, whatever thing is keeping you awake. So those are just a couple thoughts. Yeah, Peter Beck. Yeah,
there is something to that. And the way I used to do it was, I'm not an expert at this, but I found it effective sometimes. You know those little pictures that come into your mind when you shut your eyes and start daydreaming? What you do is you direct your attention up just whatever little thing shows up, and then you watch it. And then some new things will show up, and you keep watching them, and then they turn into dreams, and then you're asleep.
That's cool.
It takes a little bit of practice.
Practice to learn how to watch those
right,
images.
But yeah. It does work.
Thank you. Any other questions? Maureen?
I do some of the things that you're saying, but in the opposite way. I have this habit, if I'm working on something and I get overwhelmed, if something's too complex or it's like, I'll get all the energy will drain out of me. And what I'll do when I realize that I've become probably torporous and it was just a reaction to what I was trying to work on, is I'll go and sit. And I'll focus on my breath. I won't be paying attention to the feeling. I'll focus on my breath, and I'll leave my attention just lying on top of my breath. And so my attention's just sort of like sitting up as the breath goes up and down. So I just rest my attention right there for a while, and it's comfortable. And it completely diverts me from whatever the process was that plunged me into a low energy state.
Yeah. This reminds me, this is another instruction that the Buddha gave. The Buddha gave a bunch of different instructions, and one of the first ones he gave, actually, that I forgot to mention, was to take the attention out of whatever thought it was you were thinking when you got sleepy. And that's kind of what you're doing. I mean, it's like you had a kind of an overwhelm of thought that probably is kind of like, I've experienced this, kind of like the mind kind of thinks ahead to all the things it needs to do, and it gets overwhelmed, and then it goes, I can't do it. And it just kind of collapses. And so taking your attention out of that is skillful. You know, that and actually, you know, you don't need to so much turn your attention directly to the torpor at that point, because the torpor was, the cause of the torpor was that overwhelm. And so if you take your attention out of that thought pattern, the energy will kind of naturally return, which sounds like is what's happening as you put your attention on the breath. And so that's another thing to notice, actually. Sometimes sleepiness comes as a kind of a, I can't think, what's the right word? A defense mechanism, you know, that we get into a state or we get close to fear and we get sleepy, or we get close to anger and we get sleepy. So it's just like the mind doesn't want to deal with some of these things, so its habitual way of dealing with it is to shut down. So sometimes we need to, you know, take the attention out of whatever it is that is kind of the cause of the sleepiness, allow the energy to rejuvenate, and then perhaps begin to see, can I move toward that fear or that anger without getting overwhelmed by it? So it's a more conscious moving towards the thing that we were responding to with the sleepiness. I think that sleepiness can come when we're not mindful. Like in your state, in your situation, it sounded like you were, you know, in the state of thinking about all of these things. The mind was proliferating forward and you weren't particularly mindful of it. And then there was the collapse. And then you got aware of the collapse because of the suffering of that. So a similar kind of thing, you know, if you could follow that, the mind into its papancha, it might back off from it kind of more naturally before you landed in that collapse. So it's 9:00. Thank you for your attention.